Hello, welcome to Overdue, Conversations from the Library. My name is Anita Foster, and I'm the Library and Media Specialist from Autry Middle School.
Hi, I'm Ingrid Hansen. I'm the Library Media Specialist at Lindley 6th Grade Academy.
Hi, I'm Lori Quintana, and I'm the Library Media Specialist from Griffin Middle School.
And today, we have a special guest.
Hello, I'm Christy Ward. I'm the new Library Media Specialist at Tapp Middle School.
Welcome. So what we're doing today is a little different because it's the beginning of the year and we have a lot of new library media specialists starting in our profession. So we thought we'd give Christy a few minutes to ask us some questions and we'll just have conversations from the library from there. All right, Christy, go on and start with your questions.
Okay, so one of the first questions that I had, of course, the library is all about getting the students in and reading. So how do you get students excited about coming into the library?
I think ultimately you need to create a culture within your space that's welcoming and inviting and that kids want to be at. So it needs to be a place where they're welcomed as soon as they walk in the front door, that you're actually talking and interacting with them and you're finding out what they want, what they do, what they like. They need to feel appreciated. And they need to feel welcome. And I think that that's the first step, in my opinion.
I agree. I mean, you need to get to know them, for sure. My library program is completely built around the students. I survey them. I talk to them. I ask them. I get to know them by first name. I purchase the books they want to read. My budget is completely open to their requests for books. My reading promotions are built around, pop culture, I guess you could say, and what students are enjoying. And I create those reading promotions around there. And I make things competitive a little bit so that it brings excitement. And I provide them with incentives, and they love those incentives. So it just really is all about making it their space. And they, when they come in, it feels welcoming and comfortable for them.
I agree 100% with both of them. One thing that I do, probably about 85 to 90% of the books that I purchase are student requests. I have a big dry erase board that students can write their requests on. I ask them to write the title and the author, and then I go through and make sure that they're age appropriate for my sixth grade babies and mature enough for my eighth grade readers. But that's one thing. If you've got books on the shelves that they want to read, then they will come in to read them. The other thing that I do is, like Lori said, I have promotions that go off. I have some that go all year long and then some that are monthly or quarterly, and I just rotate them through and I try to do mine with what's popular and going on right then.
So which reading promotions do you find to be the most effective for the students?
I do things differently than Lori and Anita do. I do big ticket items. I work at Title I schools historically, and I am currently at a Title I school as well. And so my kids don't have access to all the things that other kids do that they want. So I've given away things like wireless Beat headphones and hoverboards and iPads and a variety of other large ticket items. So for me, I think I'm gonna start this year with a Nintendo Switch. So we're gonna make the switch to reading. They'll check out a book at or above their Lexile. They'll fill out a reflection form when they turn it in. They get popcorn or a popsicle, and they sit and talk with me a little bit about their reflection sheet, and then it's put into a pile. And at the end of the reading promotion, which I normally run 2 to 3 months, depending on how pricey the items were, then we'll go through and draw, and the people that are selected will win the big ticket item.
I have a question. How do you fund the big ticket items?
I was going to ask that too.
Yeah, it comes out of my local funds. So that's pretty much how I spend my local fund money. That's what I allocate it for. It's really just about reading promotions. So with local funds, I'm buying food and I'm buying the big ticket item. I don't really have enough money left over, but I will say they've been really successful. When I left my last school, one in every three students participated. So I had teachers that climbed on board and gave grades. If they filled out X amount of reflection sheets, they received X amount of participation grades. So it becomes more of a school-wide kind of activity.
Well, and right now we have our summer reading challenge going on, which is also big at our school at Griffin, and so I also do big ticket items, so our top three readers will each get a Kindle, and I also take that from my local budget, but I do three book fairs, Scholastic book fairs, each school year, and I draw in a lot of funds from that to be able to fund our reading promotions and stuff. So the summer reading program right now, I've been posting every Friday. Students get to see who the top three readers are based on the report from Biblionasium. We use the Biblionasium app or website, and students go in and record the number of minutes they've read for the summer, and their goal this summer is 1500 minutes. And right now we've had two students since last Friday that have met that, but it's kind of like a leaderboard, and I just update them every Friday with that. So
mine is not so exciting, but the kids love it. I did Blind Date with a Book several years ago during the month of February, and my students loved it so much, and it showed such an increase in circulation that I decided to do it yearly. So we have a year-long Blind Date with a Book, and my parapro changes the books out, the theme, every month. So she'll come to me a couple days before the end of the month, and she'll go, okay, so what are we going to do this next month? And I'll say, hey, why don't we highlight, and I'll pick a genre or two for that month. And it's typically a genre that the boys like and a genre that the girls are attracted to. And we she'll wrap them in two different colors so that each genre has their own color, and then we do Blind Date with a Book all year long. Now we do put these little tickets in the book that the students fill out, and then when they turn it in, they get a little prize like a lollipop or whatever, a pencil or whatever I have for that month. But so we do a little promotion that way, but it stemmed from doing it in February to where now we do it all year long.
And you know, it doesn't have to be just promoting books. So we have our Cobb Digital Library that has all kinds of databases and resources in there. So sometimes I do promotions at Griffin where the students, like at Thanksgiving, I have them go in there and find an article about Thanksgiving and read that article. And then, you know, like we did like a, they created their disguised turkeys last year and kind of wrote about what they learned about in an article from Cobb Digital Library and one of the databases and stuff. So you can like change it up, and it doesn't have to be just the reading of the books and stuff. So
next question. Okay. In what ways do you partner with teachers, and like what units do you support them with, so different grade levels with their standards?
I think it varies, and it varies every year, because you may have a teacher that taught sixth grade ELA this past year, but now has been moved to seventh grade ELA or seventh grade reading. And so it is a perpetually sort of fluid experience. But I think that the good thing is once you've established a relationship with a classroom teacher that's based upon respect, mutual respect, that they hang on to that relationship and they come back to you and they're like, hey, you know how we did this one thing? Can we do something like that? Only I want to do it for seventh grade, and here's my topic. So I think it kind of evolves, and eventually you start to spread out and cover more. And I think that the best advertising you have is word of mouth. The first time you have a teacher that comes in and she or he is so impressed that they leave and say, hey, and I had my kids in the library today, and the media specialist like did this lesson, and I had standards, and the kids were writing stuff, and it was amazing. Like, have you been in there? Like, we should totally do this again. It's word of mouth. So once you start being who you are and doing what you do, they will follow. Wasn't that Marty's speech? If you build it, they will come.
Yes, so yeah, always. So your library blog, it would be, if once you create one, if you don't already have one, I suggest highly doing that, and having all of your information that you're offering to students and teachers in that one area for them. I do that, and so something new I'm going to try this year, because collaboration with our teachers tends to be more technology related. I've done some lessons within Cobb Digital Library as well, teaching the kids how to use the databases and stuff like that, but it always tends to lean back to the technical side. And so I'm starting this new thing, and it's called Appetites, and I'm going to offer like 15 minute real quick PLs in the morning, like once a month. It's new, so I'm trying to figure out my timing, but the teachers can come in the morning. I'm going to have donuts and coffee or whatever, like Appetite. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to teach them how to use an app in 15 minutes, or at least introduce them to it so that they can learn it and at least about it. And so that's something new I'm going to start. I don't get to teach a whole lot because my library is a little bit different than everybody else's in the district, and that I have a transition hall that runs through it. So I have to get real creative with how I collaborate with teachers. But yeah, so I can't wait.
So I have a question.
Yes.
Have you...
Yes.
So,
yes, ma'am.
Have you talked to your TTIS about that? Is that something you're doing with her? Because I know you have a fabulous TTIS.
So yes, our TTIS is fabulous.
Just a second. TTIS, Technology Integration Specialist.
Yes. And so she does more of the bigger ticket items. This is mm-hmm. going to be really narrowed down. So where this comes from for me is being on the Best Apps for Teacher Teaching and Learning mm-hmm. Committee for American Association of School Librarians. And so the apps that I learned about through that committee is what I want to introduce to our teachers. And these are just really, really quick introductions to the apps.
I'm just thinking, I think it's a great idea, and I'm going to try and do something similar because it's amazing, and everyone knows I haven't had an original thought in 20 years. I just steal all of yours. But I'm just thinking Janelle may end up getting classroom teachers who say, so I heard about this from Lori, and now I want to do it in my classroom, but I need help getting my children trained and taught, and do you see what I'm saying? Like,
well, here's my thing. I build my own relationships. Janelle is super busy, and she is amazing, and her schedule is really tight, and so...
Because they have, like, 6 or 7 schools
yes.
that they support. They don't just support our one school. We're not that lucky.
I would like to think that I'm knowledgeable enough in the apps that the teachers are going to feel confident enough in learning about it from me.
Oh,
that,
I didn't... yeah,
Janelle
I just didn't...
To...
No. I'm not trying to say you aren't. I'm just saying that I didn't know if that was something you were doing, or are you turning that over to Janelle, because you said you were just doing it with teachers. So I assume that meant that you weren't... Never assume anything. That you weren't going into the classroom and helping the teacher get all the kids logged in and being able to use the app and
so I would imagine once I introduce the app to them, if any of them are interesting to the teachers, then we could do a more deeper collaboration where the kids could come into the computer lab in the library and we could tie it in with some kind of standard or something like that, or you know, the curriculum and whatever.
No, I think it sounds amazing. I love this idea.
And our TTISs, they focus on county initiatives like Microsoft and other county initiatives. I can't think of any right now off the top of my head, but sorry, I'm having fog brain.
Like with the new flat panels we're getting.
Exactly.
So our TTISs are going to come in and teach us about the smart board, that suite that goes along with that.
Well, and I feel like though too, my TTIS actually likes it. I keep a running list in my space when teachers come up and they want me to teach lessons or do different things, and I'm always happy to. Or they come in and they're overwhelmed and they're like, there's so many papers. And I'm like, are you familiar with Office 365? Do you know what a OneNote is? Have you used a OneNote with your classroom? So I keep a running total for Janelle, for my old TTIS, for teachers that need assistance.
Yeah,
Christy, listen.
I got something to say here. So, like, I help teachers with the Office network and stuff like that if they need help with it. And I do lessons on OneNote with the students and everything. I'm not the go-to person at our school. I'm in 3/4 of our school, I think, is Microsoft Innovative Educator, because our TTIS did that training for everybody. So she's my go-to. If I have a problem or an issue with it, or if I don't know how to do something, I contact Joy. But I bring them other things that she doesn't have time, because she's mandated by the county to make sure that, hey, this school needs to know this. So her people are telling her what she needs to train us on. I'm bringing the other stuff in that, hey, this is cool. Have you ever done this?
Yes.
So,
I mean, absolutely.
Yeah.
We're kind of the first stop. This is the way I view myself, that I'm the first stop that teachers are going to make. And if I can get it done, I will get it done. But if it's something that's going to require multiple sessions, and it's something that I'm sure I won't right away. Okay. All right. We're moving on.
All
off topic.
So, Christy, just know, in our district, you have your TTIS as a resource, which is awesome.
It is.
And but you can also be creative with things as well.
So the question was about collaboration, and I didn't get a chance to answer it yet. So let's go back to that. So collaboration. I attend our PLC meetings every Wednesday and Thursday, and I go to those meetings with each of the subject areas in the grade levels. I attend as often as I can.
Nita, what's a PLC?
professional learning community. Okay. So, for example,
just want to make sure in case there's any new library media specialists out there listening, wondering what a PLC, what is a PLC? Mm-hmm.
A PLC is a professional learning community. And so, for example, sixth grade social studies, that team will meet together and I'll go to their meeting. And seventh grade ELA, every subject area and grade level have their own PLC meetings, and I take 2 days out of my schedule every week to go to those. Now, I say every week, and there's times that I'm gonna be training students on OneNote, and it's a whole school initiative, and I'll have to not go to those meetings those days because I have trainings that I'm giving. But I would say over half of the school year, I get to attend these meetings with the teachers to collaborate.
So you attend both grade level and subject area?
Correct. They're broken out into grade level and subject area. So sixth grade social studies meet, sixth grade language arts meet, sixth grade science, and sixth grade math. And then I go to seventh grade. So what I try to do is go to a subject area every day. But depending on their schedule and when they meet, I might be able to attend like three quarters of them on Wednesday and only a quarter of them on Thursday.
So why, Anita, why do you think it's important that you're attending the PLCs? What does that do?
So during the PLC meetings, what I do is I go in and I listen and I find out what they're doing and what they're working on, and I try and find ways that I can help them with, whether it's resources with our Cobb Digital Library resources that we have, or something that I can create for them, or a lesson that I can do for them, or some way that I can support them. And it opens up the conversations of what I can do to help them mm-hmm. take something off of their plate.
Exactly.
And some really good lessons have come out of that. But I will go back to my first year, since that's what we're doing, is we're talking about our first year. Our first year, I did not have any lessons like for months. I'm not kidding, months. And I was weeding books out of the collection, and I was organizing it the way that I wanted it and changing things up because I had lots of spare time. And I had a teacher that came in to me. Now, my background is elementary, and not only is my background elementary, my background was elementary, kindergarten, and first grade. And here I was now in a middle school. And the teacher came in and said, "Can you do a lesson on primary and secondary sources?" And I said, "Absolutely."
Isn't that the truth? That's always the answer.
She walked out of that space. She walked out of my office, and I went on my computer and looked up what is primary and secondary sources, because I had no idea. And so a week later, she came in with her class, and she taught gifted language arts. And I really did not have much connection with her prior to that. And after the lesson, she told me it was good. And so I thought, okay, maybe I messed up something or something. I didn't know. And
but the great thing about that, Anita, is that you can always revamp, always.
Nothing oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you always have to try.
Well,
always
I
try.
Used...
As a new media specialist, try things and then revamp and make
don't
it
be
better.
Don't be afraid yes. to fail, because it's yes. going to happen.
I used 9/11 as my date for primary and secondary sources, and I did a smart notebook presentation with it and everything, and the kids thought it was cool, and they were interactive, and they enjoyed it. And she really didn't give me much feedback. And then, like a day later, I had another language arts teacher came in and said, "Hey, I heard you did this great lesson on primary and secondary sources."
Exactly. You do one thing well one time, and the word will spread.
"Do you think you could do it for my students?" And I said, yeah. "Absolutely." Before the end of the like 3 week period, I realized that every language arts teacher was doing research, and they all came in for a lesson on primary and secondary sources. So I ended up seeing every student in the school within that 2 or 3 week period. And that's how it started. And then the next year, the same teacher came in. She says, "Okay, so in addition to primary and secondary sources, do you think you could do this lesson?" And I went, "Absolutely." And she walked out, and I looked up what I needed to do. I mean, it wasn't rocket science, but it was just putting yourself out there and being available to them. And then I even had my principal one time, he said, "I see you're collaborating a lot with language arts and social studies, but there's this one group of teachers that I'm not seeing you collaborate with much at all." He says, "I'm going to challenge you to collaborate with them." And I said, "Okay." And it was eighth grade social studies. And hi, George and Rob, if you're listening. And y'all are great. Love you guys. And so I went to them and I said, "Hey, what is on your plate that you just don't have time to teach anymore. That you
that is
need,
such a great statement, and it goes so far with so many teachers. Continue. I'm just saying
that you need help with, and they said government that Rob is in the National Reserves, and he was going to be leaving. And they needed help with the government unit while he was gone. And so I wrote this whole unit for them and things the students had to do to learn about government. And instead of it taking 3 weeks of their time, I had cut it down to 2 weeks. And they really did appreciate that. They did say it was a little hard at times. And my son was in Rob's class. And he was like, Mom, I hate when you write one of our units because you write them harder than the teachers do. But I gave the teachers a choice as to what they wanted to use and what they wanted to do from the unit, and they were really appreciative.
And that's a very important part of collaboration. I think that new library media specialists would be more comfortable with doing the collaboration piece is that it is collaboration. It's not you doing all of it. It's actually interacting with the teacher and finding out exactly what it is that the students need to know at the end of the mm-hmm. lesson so that you are finding that information and putting it together and really, you know, being effective with the student learning and stuff like that. So.
And on that same note, Anita recently created a OneNote that allows you to go in and look at lessons that other library media specialists have posted. So if you feel a little intimidated and somebody asks you to do something and you happily say, oh, absolutely, I can do that, and you don't know anything, you don't have to necessarily start from square one.
And where is that at?
Other
located on
well,
website.
That's a Cobb County thing, yes. Only. So that's Cobb sure. County Media Specialist. You have access to that outside. Yes. Sorry you don't, but you could would. Make one for your county.
Yes.
It's really super easy. All right,
okay,
next question.
Christy, did we answer that question for you?
Very well. Very
okay,
20 minutes later.
I know, right?
Okay. Well, it is conversations.
And yes. Okay, so it won't be long before teachers come back. We only got a week or so. So what should I know or have in place for when the teachers return? What are they going to want from me that I should be getting ready right now?
Okay, so I always have a sign-in for language arts to sign up because I let them choose the day that they're going to come for orientations. So I have a sign up ready for them for that. You're walking into a new space, so I don't know what the previous media specialist had in place, so that's a little hard for me. We have to wear all the document cameras. I have containers of the with that and the e-beam pen and the classroom microphones are all in a sweater box in my back room. I have those on carts. I pull those out for teachers so they can pick them up and sign them out real quick.
Computer carts?
Computer cart sign in. Cobb County just went to a, or sign up. Cobb County just went to a new, what is it called? Where the kids, students sign in. I know the name of it, and it's lost me right now. But that's what I use for calendars, and it's a subscription that the county has. So teachers sign up for that. I did ask my principal. He said that the new teachers are going to be at the school on Friday, and he wants after we do our sixth grade boot camp for new students. He wants me to be available in the afternoon to do some training with new teachers to our school to show them how to sign up for computer carts and technology and stuff like that. So those are things that you'll be expected to do later on, but this is your first year. I just like listen to my teachers and find out what they need, and then next year you'll kind of know ahead of time, and you'll have your own footing and things you want to do. I don't know, is there anything else that I'm forgetting?
Okay, well, for me, it is really about helping the teachers get their classrooms ready. So I do a lot of posters for them for their visuals, their permanent visuals that will be on this wall during the school year. You have to make sure the laminating machine is consistently filled up,
yeah,
because
lamination.
They're going to laminate a lot. They'll have questions about, you know, what the library process is for students to come in and check books out, if they want to know if that's changed, when they can send them. For me, something I'm trying new this year is I'm going to do some screencasts, you know, of the basic things that teachers need to know to help their students use the library. So they'll be able to go to my blog and watch those videos as well. So the whole Destiny check-in, check-out, I'm going to do a screencast for that. And I also manage school calendars, the internal calendars. So I'm going to do a screencast for that so they know how to add the calendars. Very nuts and bolts, I guess, kinds of things that they really appreciate knowing, because then they don't have to stop and try to figure that out. They can keep going with it. They need a plan for school.
I'm
going to
add something real quick because I just thought of it as she was talking. One of the things that is my responsibility at my school, and it may be different at each school, is the website. And one of the first things I have to do is go in and make sure all the new teachers have been added to the staff page with a link to their blogs.
Yes, I do.
And add them to the distribution list and email and stuff like that. The secretary, your principal secretary, might have rights to do that, but I always get asked to do that. So to know how to
keep your butcher paper filled, if that's on your plate, your bulletin board border, your construction paper that they need for die cuts, you're just busy keeping all of that stuff stocked so they can get their classrooms prepped.
And when I went through training many, many, many years ago, Andy Spinks, who is now one of the media specialists at Campbell High School, he was our supervisor, and he said something that has stuck with me the 10 years that I've been at Autry, is that pre-planning is for the teachers, and you are supporting them any way that you can. When they have school that first week of school, so like our students start back this year on a Thursday, August 1st, it seems so early, but when they start back to school on that Thursday and Friday, and some people may even carry it into the next week, that is the time for the library media specialist to do all of the pre-planning stuff that we need to do to get ready for the students to come in. So
I think it's also a really good opportunity for you as a new library media specialist to actually meet your teachers one-on-one and to talk about what they're doing in their space and what is their year going to look like, and to offer your assistance and help, whether that's through book checkout or lessons, but it gives you that opportunity to kind of promote yourself in your space too.
A lot of media specialists, they have created menus of things that they do in their library and kind of set it out or put it in teacher mailboxes. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of like promotion by putting things in their mailboxes, and the menu can just say what you do in your space that will help them, to give them an idea. I have a library handbook that I have for the teachers as well. It's several pages, so I'm sure it's not something that is read right away, but it's a reference for them to go back to as well. So it's all about making sure that everybody knows what it is that you do in your space that will benefit the students and the teachers in their learning.
And one of the things that I like is your space, and it's going to be different than my space.
Yes.
Because it you're different, anymore, and your population is different. What?
My space doesn't exist.
My space doesn't exist anymore. Okay. But our population, our populations are different. Our teachers are different. Your skill set is different. So you're going to make this place, because we're sitting in her new library right now, is going to look different than what mine looks like. And I'm not talking furniture, I'm talking the things that you will be able to offer.
Okay, so you briefly mentioned teachers are going to want to come in here and sign up for orientation. So what does orientation look like? What all should be covered? When do I start? Which grade levels?
Okay, so at Griffin, I only do orientation for sixth grade right now. That is just the way it was when I came in. However, after talking with Anita earlier, maybe I will do like a mini orientation for our seventh and eighth graders. Most of our seventh and eighth graders will already know this information, but you do get new students that you have to take into consideration that register after sixth grade, so that's something I'm going to like revamp, I think. But orientation is whatever you make it. It's different at every school. I've seen stations done. I've seen technology used. Like we were talking about, the Goose Chase app is something new that can be used. And the kids love scavenger hunts, and it's a great way for them to learn. But I always make sure in the orientation that they're learning about the genres in the library and where those are located, where our biographies are, where our nonfiction is, because it's overwhelming when they first come into the school and trying to figure out where everything is in the library. So I take them on a little bit of a tour through the makerspace and all the different spaces in the library. And then also I do a station on check-in and check-out, because for whatever reason, the kids are going to continue to forget to put their library number in before they try to scan a book out, because we do self-checkout. So that's a major one, our station in our library as well. So, but you just kind of make it it has to be interactive, not lecture-based. You want to make it, fun for the kids, but, you know, create lessons that they're going to retain the information. Go ahead.
Yeah, I completely agree with Lori. I think that orientation is really just a very quick how to use the space. If you are an 11 or 12 year old and this is your first time to this school, how do I check out a book? How long do I keep the book? Where are the books located? How do I find a book? Just basic skills to be able to interact so that they have the ability to come in independently and they don't always have to be dependent on coming in as a class. The teachers can send them down in groups of five or whatever limitation you decide to put on that. So yeah, you're teaching them how to feel independent and be able to use your space.
Do you go over the policies and procedures at that time?
I don't have a lot of policies and procedures, but yes, if you are policy heavy, that would be first time.
Pick your top five. And yeah. You should have those available for them to see it visually anyway.
Yes.
As a reminder. Yeah. So if no food in your library, if that's something that is one of your processes or whatever, make sure that they know that, Ingrid said, the checkout time periods, they're allowed to keep the books. Those are really the major ones.
Mm-hmm. I do orientation for all three grade levels. I do a heavy one, my big one. It's more of the lecture of me walking around the space and showing them exactly what it is and our policies and procedures and stuff in sixth grade. And then seventh and eighth grade, I try to make it a little more fun. I think this year I'm going to do a goose chase for for seventh and eighth grade. Last year, because of a time constraint that I had, I had to do eighth grade all in one day, and I had two eighth grade classes to do simultaneously. So what I did was one group was checking out at the very beginning of the period, so they were allowed to check out books, while the other group was getting my recap of, okay, let's go over the rules and stuff for in here and where everything's located. And then, so they had a very sparse orientation, and then I flip-flopped it, and the other group sat down and while the other ones checked out. As far as policies and procedures, I am one of those that I don't like eating in the CLC. We have cockroaches. Our school was built in 1965. So I try to cut back eating in the CLC as much as possible. And so one of our rules is leave the CLC cleaner than you found it. Treat people with respect. Treat technology and property with respect. And there's one more, and I can't think of it right now off the top of my head. One of our policies is I have the two dry erase boards. One I get book recommendations on, the other one's teachers use, but at the end of the year I take it over and I put a sign up that says, what would you do, what changes would you make in the CLC? We call our space the Collaborative Learning Center. And what changes would you make in the CLC? And a couple years ago, I had a request to increase the amount of time that they could have a book and to increase the number of books that they were allowed at a time. So my students are allowed to check out up to 5 books for 3 weeks. So that's one of our policies. So, but orientation I do through language arts, and I start it the first full week of school.
But it really is all about what you want them to know, and that they'll be able to use the library the most effectively.
And I want to say,
independent learners. Yes, you're creating independent learners.
And I want to say that I've been at Autry for 10 years, and never has my orientation been the same as another year. Every year I redo orientation to change it for that group of students, because things change, whether it's our school went to PBIS, so we had now we have 4 rules for the space, and it's kind of consistent with things around the school. or other things.
Well, you know, you were asking earlier how you get the kids in the library. That's mm-hmm. that's your time to be on stage and really sell mm-hmm. what is so awesome about your space for the kids. So think of from that terms, you know, what do you want them to mm-hmm. know, but what do you want them to really relish when they're in here?
How do you want them to feel when they leave orientation?
Yes. Yes.
Do they leave saying, wow, that was really fun and that looks super cool and I want to read that book? And then you have to be consistent. If you've made 5 policies and those are your policies, then those are your policies every day, day in and day out.
Yes, consistency.
So you're saying, yeah, sweetheart, I am so sorry you chose to do A. But you know, if you do A, B happens. So I'll see you tomorrow. I hope you make better choices next time. You just have to be consistent.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I think we're on her last question. I know this is a long podcast, but new library media specialists have a lot of questions. So
a lot of questions.
Here we go. What, our last question.
We change it up a little bit to budget. We all want to know how to spend our money and when do we get our money. And I'm really more interested in knowing, like, the percentage-wise of how you divide it up so I don't blow it all on books and then I don't have any money left over later for something else that I didn't realize I needed. So how do you divide up your...
Okay. I'm gonna tackle this one first.
Okay.
Budget is different from year to year. Early on at Autry, I had a lot of old furniture and I used probably about a quarter to a third of my budget on furniture.
Although if you do that, you do need to get approval from Holly if you're using that much of your budget for furniture.
Yeah, I didn't have that much of a budget back then, but yes.
Well, just because you
don't know what it's like in right. everybody else's district, but in ours it goes by student count. So
yeah, so FTE dollars. So we run about 850 students, and a portion of our budget is already removed. That's something that I did not know when I started. A portion of our budget, it's sitting there, but it's already minused out from the sheet that we're going to get at pre-planning for Cobb Digital Library, because we pay for those based on FTE. And so that's something I'm like, I lost that much. It's a big chunk of change.
I think we all
feel
that.
Like that.
Yeah.
And you're like, and it'll come up on MLT and they'll be like, okay, so what do we want to keep? And then I start
MLT,
to appreciate it.
MLT is Media Leadership Team.
But it's just so costly and it's sticker shock. And it almost feels like, you know, when you got your first job out of high school or in high school and you got your first paycheck and you're like, oh my gosh, who are these people? And why did they take all my money?
Yes.
Like, that's Cobb Digital Library. So
use it. Use Cobb Digital Library.
Yes, make the money worth it.
Yes.
And then I spent the rest of it, I think, on books. I spend a lot on books because I try to get what's new and what my students want to read. So I would say even now, over 50% of my budget I spend on books. I don't pay for technology or anything for the school. I did this past year. I had some money at the end. So I bought a few iPads, but our school does not have iPad carts like a lot of Title I schools because we're not a Title I school.
How much do you set aside for like lamination? And
we don't pay for lamination.
That comes from the school budget.
Yeah.
So anything that's considered educational. So if you are not going to purchase out of your funds anything that our teacher supplies, the only thing that's your money, and you'll get a list when you go to new teacher training that will tell you the things that you're allowed to spend your state funds on. But if it, for example, you're not going to buy butcher paper, you're not going to buy lamination, you're not going to buy die cut stuff, like that comes out of a different area. You may be asked to monitor it and to submit purchase forms for them when they're low, but that isn't your budget.
They may try to get you to pay for the ink toner cartridges for the printer in your space. Do not. That is, everybody in the school uses your printers. So I have never paid for ink and toner for mine. Have y'all?
No.
So Christy, what I do at Griffin is I do what I call a forecasted budget. And so it's just like being a teacher. You are looking ahead. When am I going to be doing this? And when do I want to do this? And I look at the entire calendar and I start planning. If you do themes and things like that, I always look at what's that calendar where it tells you when all of the holidays are and national this day, national that. I look at that.
Any calendar published?
No. So I look at things and I start forecasting what I'm going to do throughout the school year, and I do a forecasted budget. So you're going to get a spreadsheet that is already created by the county, but then I create my own and I start plugging in. Okay, so I know I'm going to spend this much on Like if you're going to a conference and I know I'm going to spend this much on professional organizations, and I know I'm going to spend this much on, so if I want something new for my makerspace, I know I'm buying this with my makerspace. So I go and get the pricing for all that, and I start putting it in my forecasted budget, and it's all divided up, and I start with my big balance at the top, and then it just starts minusing everything that I plug in and from my forecasted, so I know what my bottom line is all of the time. And I know that my kids, just from prior years when they do the book suggestions, I spend probably $300 to $600 every time I purchase a bunch of those books. So I have that in there by month, and I've got that amount in there already deducted from my budget as well. And it has really helped me to kind of keep, you know, an idea of what, how much money I have and stuff like that.
I do my book purchases by quarter. So I'll do a big, my biggest book purchase comes probably in September. And then I'll do another one like in January. And all of our money should be spent by, I think it's the middle of March. So I'll do another one. And that's about the time that our Helen Ruffin Reading Bowl books come out. The list. So I'll do another purchase around that time of books. So I buy throughout the year multiple times, and I just keep a list going. And I use Follett, so I do Tidal Wave. Free commercial there for you, Follett.
And I agree. I tend to do what Lori does, is I look at my entire year and I look at what promotions I'm going to be running, and when are they going to start, when are they going to end, what is it going to cost, how am I going to fund that. And then I just back that out of my budget. I don't necessarily, I'm not as detailed as Lori, I don't do it monthly, but I do give myself an overall yearly projection. And then I back that out, and I normally use what's remaining 90% of the time for books, because I'll have also put into that, you know, if there's furniture that I'm trying to purchase, or if there's additional equipment for my makerspace or whatever that looks like. What I didn't think of and what I didn't budget for my first year as a library media specialist was book repair and book replacement, because you're going to find that your favorite books are going to grow legs and walk out of your space and never return, or you're going to find that the books are just so well loved that they have to be replaced. And there are certain vendors like Follett that will replace it for free if it's a binding issue, but you definitely want a budget to...
That's a Follett-bound book only.
Yes, Follett-bound only, but you definitely want a budget to complete those series where you found missing books, or to repair the ones that are broken, damaged.
But essentially, you just kind of have to decide what your focus is going to be for that school year, and then create your pre-forecasted budget accordingly. Like whether it's furniture, if you want to update furniture, then put that in there and get some quotes and start backing that money out of your larger number, so that you...
Makerspace items.
Yeah, makerspace items. You know, anything that you are wanting to do in your library.
And also, I will say too, really fast, that I always wish I had more money for books. I always like, and it sounds like that's such
like
a big
the cap
portion.
Money.
Yeah, stop. It's important. We need those.
I know.
But new books come out every day.
Yes,
and
they do.
You know, and that's one of the things I love to do, is to stay abreast on what's coming out and what's being released and what was just released and what are my babies going to love to read and what are they going to want.
And so, you want to keep your series up, because if there's one missing in a series, they get really bummed about that, because it stumps their reading.
They do. They'll like come
just
in.
Just like us.
I've had kids come in and say, Miss Hansen, you said this book wasn't going to be available until next week, and so I had to go to the store and buy it. I'm like, girl, you could have waited. Like, I have to process it. They know when that book's coming, and they want them. So,
I've had students who, Aaron Hunter, the people who write under that name do the Warrior series, and even though it's not my jam, it is the kids' jam, so I make sure that that's up to date. But
that is one major series to keep updated.
Oh my gosh.
When those books walk and I don't realize it, I'll have students. I had a student a couple years ago who left us and is now going to be a sophomore in high school, but her whole 3 years from her first day there, she's like, Ms. Foster, you're missing this book from this. And I'm like, okay, it is your job to keep me up to date on what we're missing from this. And she did.
On that note,
for 3 years.
As a new middle school media specialist, so Dork Diaries, Diary of a Wimpy Kid,
The Warrior series.
What about for you, Ingrid? What series do your kids love? Oh, Naruto, Michael, if you do graphic novels.
Michael Vay,
Naruto, I would say Scythe, and there's a new one coming out in August. Definitely gosh, there's so many. Anything by Neil Schusterman, my kids absolutely love. They love anything by Sharon Draper. But as far as, and that mostly they want to read things in series as well, which I find so interesting. They enjoy going back in and reading about their favorite character again and again.
I think I'm going on my third set of Diary of a Wimpy Kid series, though.
Park Diaries, Spy Mom School. Diaries.
Spy School.
Yes, Spy School.
I lost my whole,
yes,
I lost only 60 books this year that walked, which I think is relatively good.
That's good.
But my whole Spy School series was new and now missing.
Oh, for sure. Anything by James Patterson, too.
Yeah.
They love James Patterson. If you have kids that like things that are funny, they're going to gravitate right there.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. The humor section is major.
Yeah, for sure. They're in the scary section. They like scary sections.
The horror
stuff.
Section. Yep,
yeah.
Yep.
So, okay. Mary Hahn.
So I think we are ready for our burning question.
What's our burning question, Anita?
Our burning question Woo-hoo! Is, when you were a first-year librarian, what is some advice, if you are now looking back, what is some advice that you would give to a first-year librarian?
That is an awesome question.
It is awesome, and we're going to be on site at the...
At the pre-planning
for the county.
Yeah, if you're...
If you are in Cobb County,
yes.
and you're one of us, we'll be there, and we will be giving swag away to the first 10 library media specialists who are willing to come up and answer that question and record, and we will... put it out there for y'all to hear next time.
We have other swag too, but there's special swag for the first 10. So we have other swag available for everyone.
Yeah, so if you aren't the first 10, if you happen to be the 11th, don't despair. There's swag for you too. You just have to come see us.
All right. I just want to say something though real quick. So the four of us here today speaking, we all work for the same school district, but it's important to know that this podcast is strictly our opinions. We may mention our schools and our district that we work for and things and a little bit of the way we do things in our district, but just know that our opinions are our own and not that of our respective employers or our professional organizations, even though they are wonderful supporters of our profession. Just wanted to point that out there. And if we seem to kind of navigate more towards what happens in our districts, let us know what's going on in your district on #overdue libtalk, because this is for everybody. I just want to point that out. This is for all library media specialists in our district, in our state of Georgia, and across the nation. So, and I think we have some followers, if you can believe it or not, listening out in other countries already. So just wanted to make that, you know, point out there.
Yeah, I last podcast, I let my principal listen to the portion where I talked about him. And so it was kind of funny because he's like, okay, now who actually listens to this? And I went, well, because I explained that Helen Ruffin is a Reading Bowl competition in Georgia, and he heard that, and he went, and who all listens to this? It's people in Georgia. And I went, actually, we have a couple of listeners in Texas and Oklahoma and elsewhere in the United
Australia.
States.
Australia.
So, welcome down under.
Yeah, no doubt.
That was my horrible Aussie accent.
So the whole podcast is conversations from the library, and so that's everybody. We want everybody to feel welcome.
Yes. So please share with other librarian friends as the school year starts, and
feel free to contact us if you are not part of Cobb County School District and you have advice for new library media specialists. We would love to either read what you email or give you the opportunity to record it and paste it in.
And we are also now available on all major platforms for podcasting. So if
including
iTunes. So if you would like to go in there and leave us feedback, we would love that, and we will hopefully in a few weeks read a couple of your reviews.
So subscribe, iTunes.
Yes, and go and follow us on Twitter and respond to our burning question, #overdue libtalk, and share your expertise with everybody. This is what it's all about, is advocating for our profession and being better together, guys.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Bye.
See ya.